This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station in Plymouth has been the subject of controversy for years. Last week, the owners of the plant announced that it will shut down for good by 2019, but not because of safety or environmental concerns, at least not directly. Entergy Corporation says updating and operating Pilgrim isn't economically feasible with energy prices and the cost of natural gas so low. So what's involved in safely shutting down a nuclear power plant? What happens to the remaining radioactive material? And how does the state make up for the lost power without increasing its carbon footprint? More on the question of greenhouse gas emissions later this hour. First, here in the studio with me is David Noyes, the Director of Regulation Assurance and Performance Improvement for Entergy Corporation, the company that owns Pilgrim. Also, Mary Lampert, Director of Pilgrim Watch, a watchdog group that has been tracking Pilgrim Nuclear for many years. David, Mary, welcome to Living Lab.
Morning, Heather. Thank you.
Oh, terrific to be here.
Dave, why is Entergy Corporation choosing to shut down Pilgrim Nuclear at this point?
The major drivers for the shutdown of Pilgrim Station are the concerns for the low wholesale power prices, driven primarily from low natural gas costs, and concerns for the existing market structure, specifically the devaluation of safe nuclear power as an environmentally friendly source of electric power. Those are the two major drivers.
Mary, this you've been pushing for the closure of Pilgrim for years. Does this feel like a win for you?
Yes, it feels like a win. It's overdue for it to be shut down. There was really no basis for its license to be renewed another 20 years, which happened in 2012. When you think about it, Pilgrim now is 43 years old. Ask yourself, how many appliances do you have that are running in your house that are 43 years old? Probably none. If a toaster goes, big deal. But when it's a nuclear plant, it is very serious. And the argument is always made, oh, it's like new, we keep replacing the parts. And it is clear that they are not doing the replacements that they should have been doing, and largely because of economics. They cannot compete with natural gas and wind, so when a company's not making money, they are not investing in an antique reactor, and that is why the troubles began and continued until they were placed in the as among the bottom three in safety in the entire country.
Well, Dave, so Pilgrim's performance rating has fallen dramatically in the past year or so. It is now one of the lowest rated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. But we're not looking at actually, this announcement came last week about shutting down the plant, but the plant actually won't shut down for some time. What can we expect in terms of performance in the coming couple of years?
Well, first, with respect to the investment and maintenance in the plant, it's important to note that since Entergy acquired Pilgrim Station, over $500 million of capital investment has been put into the plant. Just this past spring, $70 million was invested in our most recent refueling outage. What you can expect is for Entergy to continue to responsibly operate the plant. With respect to regulatory recovery, Entergy has earmarked $45 to $60 million, which will be the funds necessary to restore the regulatory standing of the plant. And the plant will continue to safely operate through its planned closure in 2019 or sooner.
I would say, and that's that or sooner. So the announcement was that it by 2019, possibly sooner. What will that decision and the actual closure date be based on?
Decision is based on the ability of Entergy to fulfill its power contracts. So it's the ability beyond 2017 to identify other sources of power that can fulfill Entergy's obligation without the continued operation of Pilgrim.
Mary, would you like to see this shut down before 2019?
Definitely. It is past its use date, if you will. And there is a clear increase, as far as we can see, in danger for it to continue to operate. I don't think it's a big stretch to determine that if they are losing money on this reactor, it is highly unlikely they're going to go all the way in putting the improvements that are necessary in an old reactor. Also, we have seen that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission have not been stern regulators. And so the question also is, will the Nuclear Regulatory Commission insist on the fixes that should be done, or will they kowtow to the industry, recognizing that they are on their way out? For example, the Fukushima lessons learned. The NRC came up with a series of fixes that, with due dates when they are to be implemented. Some are to be implemented in 2016 and 2017. So the question is Entergy already prepared to implement those fixes next year and the year after, which will cost them a lot of money? But the orders were, these are the fixes that are required for safety. It wasn't, oh, if you're going to operate another 5 or 10 years.
Well, David, how do you respond to that skepticism, perhaps understandable, that you're saying, well, we've got $50 million, right? Is that what you said? $50 million that we're going to spend on fixes and upgrades. At the same time, we're going to then shut the plant down a year or two later. How do you address that skepticism?
Well, I mean, I can understand how people may look at it, but it's an issue of the responsibility of the individuals that work at the plant. There are 633 individuals that work there, 83 of which are residents of Cape Cod. Those individuals are committed to the continued safe operation of the station. With respect to the monetary commitment of the company, continuing to operate is dependent not only on those individuals making the right decisions, but on satisfying the requirements of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and its continuous oversight of the plant. We have two inspectors at the plant full-time. We expect that there will be additional inspection hours as a result of the plant's current regulatory standing. And we have no indication that the NRC will lessen any of the requirements necessary for continued operation.
One point. Ask yourself, why did the Nuclear Regulatory Commission put Pilgrim in the fall of 2015 in the bottom category? The reason was because of the failure of Entergy to do the fixes on the problems that were identified a couple of years prior. So do you really expect them to change their stripes now that they're on their way out? And when Entergy talks about all the money they've put into the reactor, half of it has been to buy the fuel every other year, which is very expensive. So a lot of the money is simply to keep operating. That is why they have decided early 2016 to make the decision on how much longer they're going to operate. In other words, are they going to spend another $70 million for more fuel, or are they going to close up the shop as they should?
The capital investment is independent of the fuel costs. So the $500 million that were discussed earlier are actually capital investment in the performance of the station.
In case you're just joining us, my guests are David Noyes of Entergy Corporation, Mary Lampert of Pilgrim Watch. We invite you to join our conversation. Call us toll-free at 866-999-4626. Send email to livinglabradio@capeandislands.org. Or find Living Lab Radio on Twitter and Facebook. Joining us now on the phone is Representative Sarah Peek. She's the state representative serving the 4th Barnstable District, which includes much of the Outer Cape. Sarah Peek, you have been calling for an expansion in the emergency planning zone, the area around Pilgrim that has to have an emergency plan in case something goes wrong at Pilgrim. Do you think that expansion is still necessary now that the plant is going to be shut down?
Yes, Heather, and good morning, and good morning to Mary, and congratulations, and here we move on into a whole new landscape and sort of a brave new world as we're looking at this Pilgrim plant and what does it mean throughout the shutdown process. But yes, Heather, I think that the bills that I have filed, House 2030, it's an act relative to real-time radiological monitoring, and House 2031, which would expand, as you talked about, the nuclear power plant protections to a 50-mile radius, those are still very much in play. And, you know, the plant is going to continue to operate through 2017, maybe through 2019, and then there's going to be a shutdown process. There are still thousands of spent fuel rods that are in the wet fuel, you know, the wet pool that over the years, maybe decades, will have to be moved into dry casks, and then there'll be dry cask storage at that location really into the time of our children and grandchildren are growing up. So in some ways, the story of the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant is just beginning. This isn't an end to it.
David Noyes, regarding the emergency planning zone, Entergy has already put in a request for an emergency planning exemption for its Vermont Yankee plant, which was shut down late last year. Will you make the same request for Pilgrim?
The exact changes that would be made to the EPZ as a result of Pilgrim either safe store or decommissioning are yet to be determined. With respect to the existing emergency planning zone, both NRC regulations, analysis, and MEMA support that 10-mile emergency planning zone is sufficient for the type of accident that could be speculated to occur at Pilgrim, whether it's operating or whether the fuel is stored there.
Mary Lampert?
So, yeah, if I could jump in.
Sure.
You know, you bring up Vermont Yankee, and that is you know, that's a case study for us moving forward here in Massachusetts. And as we look at the experience of Connecticut and the experience of Vermont, as there have been shutdowns of their nuclear power plants, we see that maybe Vermont has been less successful in keeping stakeholders at the table. Connecticut was perhaps more successful in that area. So in some ways, Heather, to talk about legislation that we've already filed is kind of like looking back in the rearview mirror. I had a conversation with the chairwoman of the Public Health Committee just last week, and quite honestly, I asked her to hold my two bills because moving forward, I and the rest of the delegation will be meeting with state officials from the Department of Public Health and the Attorney General's office. The delegation also has an early November meeting scheduled with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and for my part, I'm getting up to speed and doing research on our neighboring states to see what regulatory and maybe statutory changes have to be made now moving forward to make sure, like, that Plymouth and other stakeholders have a seat at the table, that we're doing the right things, not only regarding public safety, but retraining and finding jobs for those 600 and some odd people who currently work at the plant. There's a whole spectrum of issues that we now face that before the announcement that Pilgrim made, were off the table. So, as I said, it's very much a changed landscape now.
David Noyes, one thing that has changed is the decommissioning fund. If you were going to be operating for longer, you'd have a lot longer to pay into that fund. And now Senator Dan Wolf and others have said, well, with this sooner shutdown date, there's not enough money in the decommissioning fund to cover the costs that will be incurred in shutting down and decommissioning the plant. What's your response to that?
The decommissioning fund at Pilgrim is among the four tops in the industry with respect to being fully funded as required by NRC regulations. Specifically in a report this fall, the NRC determined that Pilgrim would, in essence, have $1.2 billion available for decommissioning of the plant in 2032, which by all measures is sufficient to be able to conduct and complete decommissioning of the plant.
Mary Lampert?
It is very clear that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission made a fatal error in their requirements and how much money was put aside. Instead of looking at each reactor site-specific and determining how much each reactor itself would require, they have a generic amount, which has been shown to be woefully inadequate, sticking taxpayers in the states with the extra charges to pay to clean up. And Pilgrim now has $896.42 million. A much smaller reactor in Vermont, Entergy estimates to decommission would cost $1.234 billion in Vermont. That puts Pilgrim currently $333 million behind, and it will cost far more as they have to pay for spent fuel management on site that has no forwarding address and for cleanup. We know that Pilgrim opened in 72 with defective fuel and without their off-gas treatment system, which meant a lot of bad things got out. We know in 1982 they blew their filters. So as a result, we expect a lot of cleanup, not to mention the evidence that Mass Department of Public Health has shown of tritium leaks on site. So therefore, all of that is going to escalate the costs. And unfortunately, hearing what David said, well, in 2032, we should reach $1.2 billion. That does not account for the likely increase in costs. And it's unfortunate for the town of Plymouth, because if they had had the money, the proper amount of money they would need, they could clean up faster. And what would that mean? It would mean an influx of 1,000 or so workers to provide a cushion to soften the economic blow for Plymouth, who will be losing a lot of money. And it would assure a quicker cleanup and less opportunity for radiation and chemicals to go off-site. Into where? Into Cape Cod Bay.
That's Mary Lampert of Pilgrim Watch. Also with me, David Noyes of Entergy Corporation. We will be talking more about just what it takes to decommission Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station and where that extra radioactive material might go. Thank you, Sarah Peek. She's state representative serving the 4th Barnstable District, for calling in. Our toll-free phone number is 866-999-4626. Our email address is livinglabradio@capeandislands.org. More when Living Lab continues after a short break. You're listening to Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with David Noyes, the Director of Regulation Assurance and Performance Improvement for Entergy Corporation, and Mary Lampert, Director of Pilgrim Watch, a watchdog group that has been tracking Pilgrim Nuclear for many years. Our toll-free phone number is 866-999-4626. Our email address is livinglabradio@capeandislands.org. David Noyes, a nuclear power plant is not just something that you turn off the lights and walk away at the end of a workday. What happens in 2017 or 2019, whenever the shutdown date comes? What happens after that? Walk us through the decommissioning process.
So as part of decommissioning of the power plant, when the decision is made to finally cease operation, at that time, the plant is shut down using normal processes. Decay heat removal is established using normal processes, as they would be in a refueling outage. And then the reactor vessel, the fuel in the reactor vessel, is fully offloaded to the spent fuel pool. The fuel in the pool is then transitioned to dry cast storage. And the most recently irradiated bundles, those in the last cycle, it takes about 5 years before the decay heat is sufficiently low to be able to transfer those bundles to dry cast storage.
And how long does that process take? How long are things in wet storage and then placed into those dry casks?
So for the period of time, Entergy is still looking at possibility for business models, but There's a chance to accelerate the existing dry cask storage campaign. Pilgrim has already loaded three casks that are stored on the dry cask storage pad at Pilgrim. Our plan was through the 2032 and the end of the operating license to remove an additional three casks every non-outage year. So we're looking at options for accelerating that effort with the fuel that's in the pool, putting that in the dry casks. But the longest timeline would be that 5 years after the plant is finally shut down to put that last set of fuel rods in dry cask storage.
So everything would be in dry casks within 5 years of shutdown?
That's correct. And then within, as published by the Department of Energy, the plan is for them to have a test siting for a repository, a federal repository, by 2021, with a final repository established by 2048. So the plan at that point would be to begin to transition those fuel assemblies, those dry cask assemblies, to be transported to that final repository.
Mary Lampert, you're shaking your head.
Yes, I'm shaking my head. Obviously, what we want for safety is the spent fuel pool emptied as soon as possible. As the Attorney General in Massachusetts pointed out, the densely packed pool is vulnerable to loss of water and a fire that could result in $488 billion in damages, 24,000 latent cancers, and contaminate hundreds of miles downwind. That's serious. So we want it out of there into dry cask. Entergy's plan, however, has not been to do that, only to take out enough to squeeze in the next download, because they remove a third of the core every couple of years. When David says it takes 5 years for the assemblies removed from the core to be cool enough thermally to be put into casks, that should never give the impression that everything then is coming out in 5 years, because you have every assembly that is cool enough now to put into casks since they started generating in 1972. So that is the issue. It is to the benefit, and I trust that Entergy sees this, to get it all out as soon as possible, because once they do, they can then drain the systems and reduce the workforce to a skeletal force, saving them money. And don't count on a offsite repository the date that he mentioned. We have heard these dates before, and the amount of fuel, for example, that has already been generated across the country already would exceed a Yucca Mountain. So most likely they will need two sites. And
so
who
David
will
Noyes,
go first?
Yeah. So David, let's address two different things here. One is what has been done with regard to dry cask storage during operation versus the plan after shutdown.
So the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and reputable scientific sources indicate that wet fuel storage is every bit as safe as dry cask storage. Pilgrim is responsible for the fuel that's been generated. We will continue to maintain it safe. With respect to safety, it really doesn't matter whether the fuel is in dry cask storage or whether the fuel is maintained in a submerged spent fuel pool. So for that purpose, Pilgrim will continue to make the decisions to maintain the fuel safe.
Mary, is what is the security or monitoring system that will be set up after shutdown? What is required in terms of staff and equipment to ensure that everything is as safe as it can be?
So the for the wet pool storage, pool is maintained by operations personnel, just as it is right now. With respect to dry cask storage, it's in a very secure location inside of the plant's protected area under continuous security surveillance, and will be maintained that way as long as the fuel is on site.
You're listening to Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with Mary Lampert of Pilgrim Watch and David Noyes of Entergy Corporation. Our toll-free phone number is 866-999-4626. Our email address is livinglabradio@capeandisland.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter as Living Lab Radio. Mary Lampert, again, over here, not satisfied with the answer you're getting from Entergy about the security of the storage.
Absolutely not. Senator Dan Wolf, a senator here from the Cape and the Islands, and owner of Cape Airways, has pointed out he could take one of his small airplanes and put it into the roof of the reactor, which is designed to give and is very lightweight, and bring about the loss of water in the pool. No, it's not secure from an air attack. And loss of water can also occur from mechanical failure or human error.
Is that kind of terrorism scenario something that Entergy has considered or is part of the plan?
Absolutely, as has the NRC. It's just factually not correct to indicate that the plant is vulnerable to attack from the air. Security measures are maintained at the plant. Security measures are maintained through Homeland Security. The airport in Plymouth and surrounding airports are monitored vigilantly by individuals that look for people that would seek to do harm at nuclear power plants and other targets. The safety and security goes far beyond the metal structure that encases a reactor building.
According to Massachusetts Attorney General's analyses, and I trust our Attorney General, unequivocally vulnerable to a terrorist attack, according to the Attorney General. And according to studies that have also been done at the University of Texas that also pointed out that Pilgrim was the seventh most vulnerable reactor in the country to an attack from the water. And we know the casks are far safer than in the pool. However, weapons, shoulder-launched missiles that are available today can penetrate a cask.
Nuclear power plants are some of the most secure facilities in the United States. They're essentially a paramilitary facility with respect to the defense of the fuel, defense of the dry cask storage, defense of the people that work there.
I want to switch focus a little bit here and talk about some of the economic implications of this shutdown for Plymouth. Entergy, as we've talked about, has shut down Vermont Yankee, and there you're currently supplying $2.6 million in training and equipment to communities in the emergency planning zone around Vermont Yankee. Will you be planning to do something similar here in Massachusetts?
The exact model for Plymouth has yet to be determined. We do consider ourselves a good neighbor. Plymouth has provided the plant with the opportunity to operate for the time that it has. And discussions for continuing on with the pilot in lieu of taxes under deregulation, we'll continue that dialogue with the town. But the exact figures and model have yet to be determined.
Mary Lampert, do you have a sense of what you would like to see happen in an economic sense?
Most certainly. Clearly, going along with Representative Peek, we would like emergency planning off-site to continue until all the fuel is out of the pool because risks persist. That would require funding and special legislation in the state. Also, we would like to see Entergy to continue to fund monies to Mass Department of Public Health so they can continue doing the environmental testing both on-site for tritium leaks and off-site, because we know simply when they turn the key off, that doesn't mean radionuclides that have leaked into the soil will not migrate off-site. So we would like to see that, and we would like to see the formation of community or citizens advisory panels for decommissioning that would include representatives from the state, representatives from the emergency planning zone communities and Cape Cod, in addition to the host community, that would have the ability to read through all the planning documents, attend the meetings, and serve as an educational source for an advisory source for their communities. That is critically important, and obviously to assure that a fair deal is obtained for the workers there.
Is that kind of community advisory structure something Entergy might be open to?
We could definitely take a look at that. Any decommissioning paperwork, any proposals, all that is all public information. It's filed with the NRC. That's all available for public comment and public intervention. So I'm not sure that it is a necessary step, but it's something that we'd be open to discussion on.
David, Governor Charlie Baker has raised the possibility of energy shortages, particularly here in southeastern Massachusetts, once Pilgrim closes. Entergy had to consult with regional energy regulators before making this declaration. Did they express any of that same concern?
We have. And in fact, we've been engaged with individuals at the state level and at the federal level for quite some time to address the inequities in the the energy market structure, specifically subsidizing gas, natural gas pipelines, subsidizing transmission to be able to support Canadian jobs that will bring additional hydropower into the state of Massachusetts. And none of that market reform happened in a manner that was able to recognize Pilgrim and nuclear power as a safe source of energy. Specifically, the Federal Energy Regulating Commission passed a winter reliability premium. So winter reliability premium is available to power producers that have on-site fuel capability to be able to ensure that their power is available even when gas supplies are low in the winter. That, by its regulation, was not open to nuclear power. So the most reliable sources of winter power, as demonstrated in Massachusetts, was not able to take advantage of a winter reliability premium.
Mary Lampert, you've been calling for the closure of Pilgrim for some time. Have you thought about where the energy would come from to make up for Pilgrim's loss?
Yes. Let's use a little common sense. Pilgrim was shut about a quarter of the year.
This past year.
And they're shut for about a month every other year to refuel. During all those periods, I continued to blow dry my hair, and I continued to have lights, and everybody else did too. Proof that we don't need it. Also,
and yet Charlie Baker has said that without it, we could face energy shortages.
That is what he said. However, if you look at the reports by Synapse, which is a think tank in Cambridge, if you look at CLF website, you see that they are foreseeing in the future, in the near future, that our energy needs are not increasing because of the effectiveness of energy efficiency. There is plenty of natural gas. There is also liquid gas that was brought in. Solar is growing, wind is growing, and these truly clean sources of energy are here to provide good jobs. If we gave clean energy credits that Pilgrim and Entergy wanted to Pilgrim, what would that mean? They would have, because they're large generators, a very large bucket of credits that they in turn can sell to the dirtiest polluters oil and gas, so we make no progress.
Very quickly, less than a minute here.
Yes, if the energy supply was as plentiful as Mrs. Lambert indicated, there would be no reason for the plant to continue to operate until 2019. We'd have the ability to be able to provide the power at a very reasonable cost, and the shutdown of the plant would happen earlier. That is not the case. In fact, the initiatives for clean energy that the state of Massachusetts has established has already resulted in closures of plants at Salem, at Brayton Point. And as a result of that, that has put a strain on the energy market in Massachusetts. And with respect to gas being a clean energy source, keep in mind that any time that we burn natural gas, it contributes to the acidification of our oceans. Our oceans are already 30% more acidic than they were 100 years ago, and they're anticipated to be 150% more acidic in the next 100 years.
David Noyes is the Director of Regulation Assurance and Performance Improvement for Entergy Corporation. Mary Lambert is the Director of Pilgrim Watch. I want to thank both of you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we will be asking a renewable energy expert whether the state can still meet its goal to reduce carbon emissions by 2020 without Pilgrim Online. I'm Heather Goldstone. Living Lab continues after a short break.